Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
In this week's episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast, we talk about tech hosting a regional, some recruiting info on basketball and football, and some listener questions. The 23 Personnel Podcast starts right now. You are listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by Michael.
What's up? The wrong Michael, not the Michael McDonald, Michael LaVar.
Right, I was going to try to make some kind of joke. And so McDonald had his wisdom teeth removed last week. This afternoon, bailed out on us, said he couldn't do it. What a wimp.
Don't worry. I'm shorter. I got more hair and maybe a little bit more annoying, but let's go.
I wouldn't say more annoying. The more hair thing is definitely true. Definitely more knowledge about baseball. This guy doesn't know anything about baseball. So obviously we're going to talk about baseball this week. Texas Tech is hosting a regional starting on Friday. By the time we come back and record on next Tuesday, we'll know whether or not they've advanced through the regional and who they'll play, or if their season's done. We'll touch on a little bit of recruiting. We got some questions that came in regarding recruiting, and of course, you know, Michael writes most of the recruiting stuff on the Staking the Plains website. And then we'll touch on what we learned this week. But first, because I really... So, born and bred Texan, and so was Michael, yeah. I'm not a big fan of heat, right? I'm one that's like, it gets to 100 degrees, I'm like, okay, I'm done, I'm not going outside.
Summertime's in Dallas, you go out for 15 minutes, say this isn't worth it, go back indoors.
Right? So I'm not looking forward to this week. The entire week, forecast, 100 degrees plus. What? I don't even know what to do besides just not go outside.
Yeah, the problem is specifically the fact that the regional is in Lubbock, and of course Texas Tech chooses the day game. It's going to be 108 during that game. Of course, it's dry heat, as people like to point out, but 108 is still brutal, man.
Yeah, so when Tech was out on the road facing Louisville in Kentucky, it was actually like really,
it was like 40 degrees.
Really cold. Degrees. It was raining and snowing. And now we're like, hey, Louisville, you want to come back for, you know, home and home, essentially? You're going to have to face us in 100-plus degree temperatures.
Which I guess maybe is the reason why Tech chose the early slot. But then again, the team they're playing the first round is New Mexico State, and they also have no heat. So I don't know.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and jump into baseball. I don't really... Besides staying inside, there's nothing else I want to do when it gets super hot is just stay in the AC. Although LaVar and I will be at the baseball game at least on Friday. Secured some tickets from our season tickets in our office. Excited to go to it'll be my first regional to go to. I haven't been to a regional game.
It'll be my third. I went to the first two. The first one a little bit better than the second because of the results. But
yeah, hoping to go to Saturday night's game. Not Saturday afternoon, meaning that Texas Tech would have won their first game. You would expect so, facing the 4-seed New Mexico State. Just like the Big 12 tournament, it's a double elimination. You win three games and you're in. You're done.
Yeah, basically. Well, if you lose, I believe the first game you'll have to win like four games. But essentially,
yeah,
if you take care of the first two, like Tech has done in every regional since Tadlock's been here, then you just need to win one more.
Yeah. So the problem with losing a game in these double elimination is one, having to play more games, especially considering Tech's pitching depth, starting rotation depth, I think is really scary if you're not just looking at three games. The regional, you can get through the regional in three games. You can get through the super regional in two games. I think you feel pretty good about being able to get through, you know, a three-game series. If you're talking about having to play four games, then, you know, you're starting to stretch it a little bit and calling on guys that have not been a very consistent starter this season.
Well, actually, there's only been one consistent starter. So after game two, you start getting to the non-consistent.
Well, you know what I mean, though.
But speaking of that first game, it's usually rare that we face a team that we've seen plenty of times, especially in the past 5 years. We've played them like 10, 15 times.
We've played New Mexico State a lot. The only other team I can think of that we've faced in a regional that we've played a lot would be New Mexico. Correct. But they were also, they weren't the four seed coming into the regional.
No, they were the three seed, and it was actually was a little bit of a shocker when they defeated Dallas Baptist and faced us. But I remember being for that game, we were all scared because we split with New Mexico. We're like, what are we going to do? New Mexico State's a little bit different. We beat them twice this year, once 12-0 in Lubbock, which was just a total dismantle. And then a walk-off win in Midland.
Yeah, that Zach Reams home run.
Yeah,
which one there's only like one video of it. It's from like, I think, a Midland reporter or whatever shot it. But
some news person. So, I mean, there's some, I guess, some good results there. And if you look even more in the past, we beat this team like 19-0 and stuff like that before. So hopefully we'll not all of a sudden start losing to these guys.
I'm a little sad we aren't facing Texas State and that right fielder that could not ever find the ball. I can't remember his name. And Jamie Lent knows it's perfect, but it's a multi-syllable name. And I couldn't even begin to start to...
We talking Texas State or Texas Southern?
Texas Southern, you're right. There we go. Yeah.
I believe that was last year, and they actually gave LSU a good run for their money in their regional game. But what those two teams do have in common is this offensive power. They do not have a lot of pitching, but they do know how to hit the ball.
Okay. And sorry, I found his name. It's Olahide Olarun-Timalehin. Sorry, I'm not
just even Big O. Let's call him Big O.
Big O. That dude struggled hard in the field. Anyway, so Tech game one facing New Mexico State, like we were just talking about. New Mexico State has an RPI of 87. So,
well, considering 64 teams made the field, that's probably not a good thing for them.
you would think that there would be 23 teams ahead of them on the RPI that are scratching their head, saying, "How did he get in?" or "How did they get in?"
The magic of conference tournaments.
Yeah, because they did not play a very tough non-conference schedule. According to D1 Baseball, their non-conference RPI was 127. Not very stellar. They don't play very stout competition in their conference, although it helped bring them up from 127 to 87. Some news and notes from I believe it was a Louisville.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Media outlet talking about this regional. New Mexico State has 9 hitters with a batting average better than 300, with their best guy hitting 332. Now, I don't have the Texas Tech roster pulled in front of me. 332 would be best, would be good for what?
5th or 6th.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And this other guy, he also has the most home runs at 9. I think 9 home runs for Tech would also be in the 5-6 range. No, it would be at least 6 because I think
I believe Little, Warren, and Young have more, and Reams, so it'd probably be 5th, I would guess.
I think I saw that Texas Tech has 5 batters with at least 10 home runs. So anything under 10 would be 6th. They also have... Or it was reported that they may also have some pitching depth because as far back as this reporter went, that they were losing almost all of their game 3s in series. I don't know if you would worry about seeing New Mexico State's third starter.
Well, if we're facing their third starter, we probably didn't do that well.
If you're facing their third, you would think. If you're facing their third starter, you should have a pretty good chance to make up a game there. But for a team, their team, like if you're looking at pitching, their team ERA is 3.95, third best in this regional. Unfortunately, Tech is the worst ERA. I think that's more of a recency bias. I think their ERA, especially their walks, have kind of ballooned over the last couple of weeks. What have you seen from Tech the past couple weeks?
Not good baseball. No.
Well, it was better in Stillwater.
It was, so, which was a good sign. When they lost to TCU on the road for the first time in like 5 years, lost to Texas at home, lost some midweek games, he started thinking, like, is this team going to be able to do something in the postseason? But luckily, having 3 pretty good wins in Stillwater kind of boosts your confidence again. Like, hey, maybe this team's just starting to get hot, which in baseball, that's exactly what you need, is a team that's starting to get hot as you go into the postseason.
But if you then look at the conference tournament, Texas Tech doesn't do too well. If they had gained momentum in Stillwater, they may have lost it again in Oklahoma City.
I'm not too concerned because of who Tad like threw out there kind of to see about postseason experience, who he could trust, and they never do well in the conference tournament. So me personally, it doesn't really affect how they're going to play, I think.
Yeah, so I can understand Tadlock's approach to the conference tournament in that game one starter typically has not been the ace of the staff, correct? It's usually been the third or fourth guy.
Yeah, in the conference tournament, typically their best pitcher has not been the guy that goes
first. Yeah, understand that if you're the conference tournament, we were talking with Michael last week, to win that you needed to win 4 games, but if you lose a game, you have to. I think you end up having to play 6 games. So, you have to kind of stretch your staff just to get to the 4 games, and that would be a sweep through the tournament. But once you lose a game, it seems like, okay, let's just see what else we've got before we get eliminated, because again, you're on really an uphill battle there, having to win 5 of 6. You have to win 5 in a row essentially at that point.
Yeah, and I think Tyler got a lot of answers. I actually liked what he did this past week. He found out that Ty Harpenu looked like a guy you could trust. Ryan Shetter put together some few innings. Maybe he's a guy you can trust. We had Ryan Subletty the first game. He still hasn't done that well, so maybe we don't see him as much in the postseason. But we found a couple long relievers that tell me, hey, let's start him this game. Let's bring him in this game knowing I could get some good innings out of him.
Yeah, so starting Sublett, again, because of the weird timing of the start of the Big 12 tournament, you know, you started on a Wednesday. If you had moved Davis and Killian up, you were taking a day of rest from them to, you know, play in somewhat of a meaningless tournament for Tech. I think they had a pretty good...
They basically, I think, had to win the tournament to be a national seed, it looked like, so wasn't really much ground to gain.
Yeah, and it looked like they obviously had the regional pretty well squared away, so... You know, you won a game, which is fine. Kind of wish you had won more than one, but that's okay. Because, again, we talk about the pitching, the starting pitching depth of Texas Tech. If they had won a second game, they would have played four games. Or so, you know, if they'd lost the first game and then won two more games, they would have played a fourth game. You're starting to look at, like, a fourth starter and really kind of stretching your staff for a tournament that wouldn't really benefit you all that much to win.
Exactly.
I just kind of throw my hands up because it's just kind of it's a weird spot to be in because, like I said, it started a day earlier. You don't really want to mess with your starting rotations, rest days. You know, you didn't do all that hot. Hopefully there's no lingering effects going into the regional in terms of momentum or anything like that because you do have a, you know, you've got two teams in your regional that are fairly hot coming in.
Before we get to those two teams, let me ask a quick question. In the past, Talak has started either his ace or his number two guy day one. Knowing the lack of pitching depth and the fact that you're a one facing a four, would you risk starting your third starter against New Mexico State?
So I had thought about this, and the way I heard it phrased actually this morning is that if you don't use one of your better starters, whether in Davis or Davis Martin or Killian, is that you run the risk of not pitching one of those two and get eliminated.
Well, my thought process behind it is if you want to win, you're going to have to get three wins, so you're going to need three pitchers anyway. So my opinion, even though I think this is a very risky move considering the weekday staffs, since the pitching has not been as on this year, I think I'd rather throw out the number three starter and just see what happens.
I think I would be more comfortable with that if, like, we were looking at a Dushek coming in instead of a Sublett.
Well, maybe that third starter is a Shedder or a Harpinu. Would that make you more comfortable?
No, because I want Harpinu to come in as a long middle
reliever.
You want him
reliever. To be the long reliever role.
So maybe he would cut, like, the if we're going to have a third starter go first, Harpinu would be the first guy in after him to kind of hold... You know, hold over until, you know, I don't know, because if you do that, then you're looking at Harpinu being unavailable the second game, needing to come in the third game after Killian probably, because if we're talking about...
That's also a good thing about him going first too, is you can use him later in the week if you need to, much like Hayden Howard when he was here 2 years ago.
I miss our good pitching.
Oh, I do too.
Not that we don't have good pitching, just right now...
They're young.
And it's just super inconsistent, which you would expect with young staff. I would tend to skew more towards starting Davis on Friday because of my uncertainty of having a third starter go first and possibly lose that game.
You just want the kind of like the guaranteed win, like let's make sure we win this game.
Yeah. I would hate to be 0-2 at a regional you're hosting and leave a guy like Killian on the shelf who has your best numbers, albeit the fewest
innings.
Well,
I'm not saying Killian would go third. Like, maybe he pitches Saturday no matter what. You know what I mean? Like, if the number three win or loss regardless, like, maybe Killian still pitches next, knowing that it's basically a must-win if they lose, and if they win, the winner's bracket is a huge advantage. It's game two is always the biggest game of this tournament.
Yeah. So that, I mean, I would want Martin to go game two, although I want, you know, beginning, middle of the season Martin, not this guy that we've seen the past couple of weeks Martin.
He definitely needs to turn it around.
Yeah, he does. It's just, it's kind of, again, it's what I heard was about, like, people have been asking, what's wrong with Davis Martin, you know? One of the radio guys said he's got the velocity. He's just getting, batters are getting better contact on his pitches because what used to be ground balls are now getting lofted. Like, these are still really weakly hit balls, but they're still hard enough to get past the infield in front of the outfield. They're getting kind of some weak blooper hits. And that somehow, for some reason, he wasn't getting as much rotation and movement on his pitches as he was earlier in the season. I don't know how you fix that. I'm not a
pitcher. You talk to the Houston Astros.
Forget the Astros, man.
All right, so we have the second game of this tournament that you're about to mention, Louisville and Kent State.
Yeah, so what scares me is you get a team like, you know, a caliber team like Louisville in here in your regional that has hosted regionals and super regionals. They've hosted the past 5 years of regionals. It was also a little factoid. They are the only team that has made it to the past 5 super regionals in a row. So 2012 through 2017, they've always made it to a super regional. And they're not a host this year. Not that they're not still a, you know, scary team.
They don't have as many first round picks is a good way to put it.
Yeah, and from the article I referenced earlier, their offense isn't something that is going to scare you, except, you know, your pitching staff and its struggles. They only have they have two batters hitting better than .313, and only two hitters have more than 4 home runs. So they're not like a big power hitting team. So if you're going to be going after anybody, you know, on offense, it would be Louisville. They don't have the offensive firepower that even New Mexico State has. But they are still a really strong team. They've got the history of making it far into this tournament. The other thing that I think you can take some, I wouldn't say comfort, but a little bit more confidence if you were to face them, is that their star closer apparently has been out since April with some kind of arm injury. It's possible he could be back, but...
And as we have seen this season, Tech does have, even if they didn't win, they did have some tendencies to score runs late.
Yeah, and them being out a closer, you think you'd, you know, if you were down and facing their closer or whoever it is coming in late, you might be able to make up, you know, the few runs that you might need. Facing Louisville, though, that would probably mean you won your first game, or, you know, hopefully you didn't, like, you both didn't lose your first games.
Well, I actually should mention that the number 3 seed has won the Lubbock Regional the past 2 years. So there is that.
You just had to throw that out there, didn't you?
Of course.
Speaking of the 3rd seed, that's Kent State Golden Flash. What a great mascot there.
So what is a Golden Flash? Is that a bird?
You know what? I have no idea. I'm going to look it up real quick.
I mean, I've seen it on some Kent State highlights because I'm a crazy Boston fan, so Edelman, of course. But I've never quite got what was on their helmet.
Yeah, it's some kind of bird. It looks, it's got a beak. All birds have a beak. That was dumb. their logo has a pointed, sharply pointed beak, like some kind of eagle. But... Yeah, I don't know. It's just a bird behind a K. So,
anyways,
3 seed Kent State Golden Flash. Their first game will be against Louisville. You know, so their RPI, they're at 61. So, if you're talking about looking at 64 teams making the tournament, they would be towards the bottom there. Their record against RPI, you know, RPI rank 1 through 25, they're 1 and 2. So Texas Tech and Louisville would fall on that 1 to 25. 26 through 50, they haven't played anybody in that range. 51 through 100, they're only 2-4. So again, they haven't played a lot of great competition. That one win against the top 25 RPI came against Arkansas in Fayetteville. So something I found really interesting is that Arkansas only lost 3 home games all year.
And I'm pretty sure the other two were against, you know, like a Florida or Ole Miss or one of these national seed SEC teams.
Yeah, and the other one they lost was Kent State. Now, they played a full 3-game series against Kent State, and they lost one of the 3 games. But it was a home game. One of only 3 they lost at home this season was to Kent State. So you know they've got, you know, confidence in being able to go on the road in a tough environment and being able to win. But they've also lost against some pretty bad teams. Sam Houston State, not as good this year as they have been. They've lost at least 2 games against them. Ball State, Ohio, and Miami of Ohio have all beaten Kent State at least twice. They're not also not a very good power hitting team. They don't have a player with 10 home runs, and as a team have been kind of slumping. I've only hit 1 home run in the past 8 games.
Ooh.
So in terms of power, they're kind of limping into the this tournament. They have won 11 of their last 14. So,
and Louisville did win 14 of the last 17. So there goes one hot team's going to.
Yeah, so one of those is going to have to lose a game. But
and also maybe a good thing is these winning streaks have gone from 14 to 17 games. And usually how long are you hot for? Like 2-3 weeks typically?
That's what I would think. Like you wouldn't be going, you know, 3-5 weeks. So
like maybe they peaked a little bit too early.
You would hope so. That they would kind of lose their momentum on the road, you know, in a tournament setting against some unfamiliar foes. I don't think, besides Tech and Louisville, well, I say that. Besides Tech, the other 3 teams I don't think they've played each other this season, whereas Tech has played both Louisville and New Mexico State. I don't think Louisville's played Kent State or New Mexico in any of those combinations. Of course, I didn't do that. I didn't do that research and look at their schedule that closely. So, unfamiliar foes on the road in a strange place. Going to be super hot this weekend. Let me ask you, Michael, how do you see the weekend going?
When I first initially saw the draw, first of all, I had just mentioned before I say this, I'm a very pessimistic guy when it comes to sports typically. But when I first saw the draw, I was thinking, it's not a fair draw. Like, it wasn't like we're playing some tough teams. But it wasn't an easy draw, but it wasn't a tough draw. It's just pretty normal, I thought. You had a hot Louisville team, but one where Tech split in Louisville. Given it was their midday starters, but who knows, maybe we'll have to face off midday starters again. Then he had a New Mexico State team, which we've dominated basically in the past, so I thought it was pretty fair. There are a lot of, but the thing about it also is all three of these teams you can't overlook.
Mm-mm,
this isn't no. Like some tournaments where we had Delaware, or I believe Fairfield, the first one, we're like, oh, like we got
Fairfield.
This.
Fairfield.
I don't even know how I remember that. We beat them like 14-1. But all 3 of those teams could beat Tech. But Tech also has a pretty good shot against all 3 of these teams as well. Just, we need Tech to play like they did in Stillwater.
Yes.
Where the bats were alive. And even in the conference tournament, outside of that first game, they scored a lot of runs. They had bats alive. The pitching staff gives up 3-5 runs, which obviously we want less, but if the offensive numbers are what they were like, then that should be fine. You know, kind of like the Rangers of the 90s, basically. We just need our bats just to all explode at the right time.
Well, I don't know if that's even asking that much. If you know, you're looking at Josh Young, Grant Little, to continue to do what they've done. It's not that they've gone on super hot streaks and piled up all their hits all at once. They've been performing at a pretty consistent level all season, a really high level. And then you got guys that can explode, like a
Michael Davis, for example.
He was really streaky, but like you've also got Cam Warren that kind of got hot in the conference tournament, hit a couple home runs.
I still don't know how he didn't make it all but 12 tees. That's a shame right there.
That second home run in the tournament was ridiculous. It looked like it was like a Vladimir Guerrero type swing at a pitch out of the zone and still somehow managed to hit a no doubter home run. Like he hit it and just stood there. He kind of broke an unwritten baseball rule. He admired it for a second. I was like, come on, dude.
come on. You have to admire those. But there is a reason why the Yankees did draft him out of junior college. So he does have some talent there.
And let me just say, it was really weird to see Gabe Holt in right field.
Yeah.
It looks so out of place. Like, that's not a right fielder.
I'm not going to lie, with the whole graduating thing and going back to Dallas, I did not catch a whole lot of Tech baseball the past 2 or 3 weeks. But that was a little surprising that they flipped Holt and Klein. Maybe there was some fielding issues with one of those players, but who knows?
Yeah, so with this new defensive alignment, it didn't look like there were any issues. He had plenty of balls hit out to him, Gabe Holt in right field. Didn't seem to have a problem with any of them.
Maybe it's kind of like a Mookie Betts situation where you're infield, but you're so fast that you just put in the outfield and like you don't need to make any – like a regular player would have to dive for a ball and you would already be there, mm-hmm. type deal.
Yeah, he was – when they put him in the outfield, they were – The broadcast was kind of making a joke, like there's not a faster outfield than what Tech is putting out there.
I highly doubt it. If there is one, I want to see.
Yeah, I mean, you had Grant Little, Cody Farhat, and then you added Gabe Holt. Who is your fastest guy?
That's about like 30 stolen bases in that bunch.
At least, because Holt had 27.
I lost count, but it was in the 20s.
He did get – was his first time thrown out stealing was in the conference tournament. I think he was 27-27.
But it was a pickoff throw, so technically it wasn't caught stealing because he wasn't stealing. He was going back to the bag, but yeah.
Anyways, I don't know if I have a preference of, you know, of Grant Klein – or Grant Klein, that's not a guy. Brian Klein in right fielder second and Gabe Holt – whatever works. I think the biggest question is just making sure you're starting pitching. And then when you call on the bullpen, that they can continue to perform.
So who do we trust out of bullpen? Just Arpanu, well,
yeah,
Quesada, anyone else?
Well, if Shedder's not a starter, then I think you can trust him. I think if Dushek, his injury / blister issue, if that's what it was, that got him pulled from the conference – from pitching in the conference tournament, if that's resolved, I think you can rely on him. Past that, I don't know. I just know there are guys I don't want to see. Like, is it Freeman?
With you don't like Caleb Freeman?
The long hair and the mustache?
Yeah.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, come on.
Him, Sublette, you know, only if you need to...
Probably no Connor Queen this time around.
He's kind of struggled a little bit. So is Dane Haveman.
Yeah, I haven't seen Haveman pitch in forever.
Haven't seen like a Kurt Wilson out there in a while.
Yeah,
I wouldn't throw Kurt Wilson.
I haven't really seen him pitch, but all I know is every time I check on Twitter or something, it's always a walk hit or something along that line. I'm like, we're not saying these guys are bad, but or will be bad, but this season it's just the way baseball is. It's just the way baseball goes. This hasn't been their season.
That's the way baseball go. Yeah. You would hope you have limited innings coming from your bullpen, knowing that you've got a small group of guys you could count on. I think Quesada is your closer.
He's got to be, I think.
I think he's actually leading the team in ERA.
McMillan? Do we trust McMillan in a bullpen situation, or is he going to start? I think lately he's been in the bullpen, so maybe he's just another bullpen piece.
I think I would trust him more as a bullpen later in the game, maybe not end of game.
Like seventh inning against the bottom of the order or
like
whatever
seven,
situation.
Eight, yeah. Kind of like your late reliever, your setup guy to get
you
to
could
Quesada
just do the whole Cleveland Indians thing, throw your Quesada against the middle of the order, throw a McMillan against near the bottom of the order.
If that's what works, you know. I don't know what works. I'm not Tad Lock. I'm not in his shoes. So I just know there are some really great pieces in the bullpen. Then there are a lot of guys you're like, I don't feel confident in putting him in a must-win situation right now.
Gotcha. So what do we think is going to happen? Is Tech going to get out of this tournament?
So you kind of already answered that, right? You gave your opinion.
I kind of gave an opinion. I didn't give an answer. Kind of the whole one of those broadcasters on announcing the game, I can't give an opinion thing.
I'm much more confident if they win game one. If you start off in the winner's bracket, obviously you've got a much easier stretch to get to.
Because I think you and me can both agree if Queen's on the mound, we have a good shot to win game two.
Yes. I don't know if you do that, one, you're moving him up in your rotation. And then you know how pitchers are as mentally unstable as your football kickers. Would do to Davis Martin to get bumped back.
Well, if you think about it, like if Martin, let's say it's your plan and Martin goes one on Friday.
Okay, yeah.
Killian's been pitching on Saturday most of the year, so this isn't like a whole weird thing.
Well, no, I was assuming that we were actually going with more your plan, that we had a third guy start game one.
Well, you moved Martin back, but I mean,
yes. If Martin goes first, you take care of New Mexico State. I think you feel really good about Killian going game two against either Louisville or Kent State.
I'm willing to bet money Killian wins game two, no matter who he faces.
Which would be outstanding if you also win game one, then you're in a position where,
and perhaps
you've got a possible three games left to win one.
Well, it's two actually, because it would be double elimination, so we'd have to win one of the next two after that game two win.
Right.
So
if you were to win one of the games, so like if you won the second game on Sunday, which is the only way that you would go to four games.
The only way you go four games is if you win the first two games, like let's say Tech wins Friday afternoon, Saturday night, we would play Sunday night, and if we lose that game, it would be a winner take all on Monday afternoon.
That's true.
Either way, let's not think of scenario where we lose game one.
No, you really need to win game one. You feel really confident with Keeling on the mound for game two. Put you in a really good spot. Speaking of pitching rotations, because you are one versus four seed on Friday, you've got the most wiggle room in terms of, like, if you were to adjust your starting rotation, you are the one team that could do it. You could run out your number three guy on Friday, save one and two to go Saturday, Sunday to win the tournament.
That would be my plan if I were Tadlock.
Yes, you just need to be really confident in whoever you put out there on Friday to win you game one.
Which, in my opinion, would be Shedder, but it's Tadlock's decision in the end.
I would be okay with Shedder because he was doing really well against Oklahoma State in the tournament.
And not only that, but when he was a weekday starter, he actually played New Mexico State beginning of the season, and he's
the one
that
pitched. Was that the 12-0?
Yeah, that was 12-0 game, so he actually has done pretty solid in the weekday. So
okay, you've convinced me. Let's not have Davis Martin or Caleb Killian go Friday. Let's move up Shedder to Friday afternoon. You win Friday. Put Martin on the mound Saturday night.
You put Martin, not Killian?
Well, because I don't know if I want to adjust. I don't know.
You don't want to move Martin that far off his start?
Because he already seems like he's struggling. I don't want it to spiral. I don't want it to get worse by moving him back. Because I would really want, I want Killian.
Watch, like, we're talking about all this rotation talk, and by the time this podcast comes out, it'll be announced.
Yeah, well, Tadlock has that tendency to put up a lot of TBDs in the rotation. Which is not
the man who has no name.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so he put that out there on one of the rotations, didn't he? It was like Maine or somebody?
He's done that like four or five times this year. Typically, well, in the last starter spot.
Yeah, I'm sure it was put as like TBD, but it showed up in like one of the programs or whatever, like a lineup card as the man who has no name, and it was really funny. It wouldn't have been a lineup card, but so, okay. Shedder on Friday, Martin on Saturday. but no. Okay, no. Shedder Friday, Killian Saturday, Martin Sunday.
That's exactly what I would do.
Because why I just changed my mind and convinced myself of this, because if you move back Davis Martin one day, you're saying, yes, we moved you back, but here's your chance to go win us the tournament.
That'd be a good thing. Not only that, but I think I may be completely wrong on this, but I believe he did get moved back against, I believe, either Texas or Oklahoma State. So I don't think it would be the first time that he did not pitch on a Friday or a Saturday.
So it is, you would essentially be flipping your rotation and pitching backwards.
Basically.
But as a one seed, needing to win three games and not wanting to overstress or get really, you know, anxious going through this tournament, you need to win games one and two. Going against a four seed, especially with Shedder having already faced him and done really well, I would really, you know, Michael, you've convinced me. Let's do Shedder on Friday. Killian, because I'm most confident in his ability as a normal weekend starter, put him on Saturday. And then Martin, you give him the ball and you tell him, go win us the tournament. And you do it then. You sweep. You go 3-0.
Correct. Of course, none of this will happen, probably, knowing us, but
who you knows? Say that, and
we
then,
can have we can be optimistic for once.
I just don't want to lose. Like, I don't want to go 0-2. I don't want to go 1-2. I want to go 3-0. Now, I could understand. Like, I think I'd be okay if Tech were to win the regional, but lose in the super regional in three games. But you have to get out of the regional this year. Like, not getting out of the regional last year was a travesty.
Yeah, considering that was, in my opinion, the best team Tech had in baseball. Even though the final result didn't show it, I believe that was the best team Tech had.
Yeah, so going into this season, I would say I think this season would have been better. If it was full health.
Gingrey doesn't get hurt and Martin doesn't all of a sudden implode.
Yeah, he and Lanning.
Just got injured. Like, I'm not sure what happened.
Yeah, but he just kind of just disappeared.
Pitched the first week and then it's, oh, he can't pitch anymore.
And then obviously the offense this year, I haven't gone back and checked. I know like guys like Grant Little and Josh Young have made huge steps this year over last year. It seems like this year has been more potent and more.
It's more consistent.
More consistently powerful. I don't know if you hit the 50 home runs you did last year.
I don't believe we did. I think we had Hunter Hargrove, but that was the only consistent power source throughout last season.
Yeah. So if everybody was full health, I would say this year would be your more talented roster. But yeah. So anyways, I really want to get out of the regional this year. I don't want to see some junk pitcher throwing like 200 pitches against you and you not being able to hit him. Because I'm thinking back to the guy that we faced against Sam Houston State that I think threw like legit 170 pitches that weekend.
I know he pitched, I believe, like every game. He pitched at least two or three innings.
Yeah, because he was like their like number one starter. So he went first and then third. Like he went game one and game three for them. And we faced him game three. And then there was that guy that I don't think it's the same guy, but there was a guy that threw super slow. I think in game four, where we like the double had the second
time we played them. I try to forget that weekend, so my knowledge of that may not be what it was. But you know what? They're not in the tournament this year. We don't have to worry about them.
Yeah. Suck it. Yeah. So I'm looking at. So last year's team in terms of home runs, you had Orlando Garcia at 13, John McMillan at 8. That's 21.
Yeah, but McMillan didn't play the whole time. That's kind of a.
That's true because I think he's got one this year, which I
believe he played 15, 20 games and only played like one game in the postseason.
Well, he played 24 games in 2017 as a DH. Whereas I think he's played two games or three games as DH this year, and like he's it was super early on.
He's played a little more, but Zach Greene's kind of told him, "I got this." So they just focused on pitching.
Anyways, in terms of home runs, you've got 21. This is great podcasting, by the way.
Research on the spot. You know, I know you had Hargrove had a few there.
Hargrove only had five. Ryan Long had five.
I believe Josh Jung had about three or four, I want to say.
Josh Jung had six. Cody Farr had three. Grant Little had two.
I think Grant Little's got a little bit more power this year.
Yeah, no joke. Zach Reams had two. I don't remember him playing at all last year.
He started the year, and then I know him and Cam Warren started the year last year. I've written about this before. And then they got – Talak liked them a lot, tested them out, but then they got benched for eventually, I believe, Farhat took over one position, and they kind of switched out DH throughout the season.
Anyways, it was actually a little bit higher than I was thinking. I think it was in the mid to upper 40s in terms of home runs for 2017. 2018.
I'm pretty sure about three or four guys this year already surpassed that.
Well, if you look at the top five guys, all of them have 10 or more. So that's 57 home runs in your top five guys.
I'm telling you, we're the late 90s Rangers. That's who this team is.
And then you got a bunch of guys, Gabe Holt, Cody Farhat, Brian Klein, Zane Willems, Braxton Fulford, Kurt Wilson, John McMillan have five or fewer. So you don't have as many guys hitting home runs, but you've got majority of your top five guys, like I said, hit more than your entire team last year.
And then Davis in the back lineup could go off at any minute during the tournament, any inning, just all of a sudden just click it.
Well, he, in terms of home runs, he's tied with Josh Jung at 11. He's got more than I remember. Cam Warren has 10. Grant Little has 12. Zach Reams has 13.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I'd say. All right, so I'm saying with our super knowledge of pitching rotation, Tech goes 3-0 this weekend, going Shedder, Killian, Martin, moving on to the Athens Super Regional only if Georgia wins that regional. So Georgia is the number 8 national seed. In terms of seeding, we are 9th. So you have the 16 regional
Speaking
hosts.
Of 9th, I think... I actually think we got ranked too high. And it's actually might be a bad thing, because if we go to the College World Series, our first matchup is Florida.
You're looking way ahead, man.
I said if.
I'm looking at like getting out of the regional and who we might face in the Super. You're like, man, once we get to Omaha, we're facing Florida. Like,
I'm just saying, if we somehow get past these, our path does not look very good.
I'm thinking if we play Florida, I just want to go against Jonathan India and have him hit a would-be double into left field and have him get thrown at second every time he comes up to bat.
Fair.
That throw and that tag was ridiculous.
It was Gardner, right? Gardner was the throw?
Mm-mm. It was, now I have to look it up. It wasn't
Because I know Little was left. No, the Little wasn't there yet. It was Neslonian left.
It wasn't Nestle? Last year. Yeah, it was Nestleoni. He threw him out.
Which was strange, because he had some of the weakest arms I've ever seen for an outfielder at Tech. I remember me and my friend always comment about how he could hit 400, he could run around, but he's never going to throw you out. And then, gosh be darned, he threw someone out in the College World Series.
Yeah, that throw was just ridiculous. It was maybe like a one bounce, like from like deep, deep left field.
It's very vague for me. I was working that day, so I don't remember exactly what happened.
Well, I'm pulling up the video right now, just so we can all...
Just so all our listeners can watch it.
Yep, just so they can watch it. So, okay, so Stephen Smith was in right field. I remember he almost ended the game like a pitch or two before, because India had popped out to right in foul territory, but just far enough where Stephen Smith dove, barely missed it.
That kid's always around baseball games, by the way.
Yeah, so I go into a handful of baseball games this year at Tech. I saw him a lot. I saw Ryan Long quite a few times. I saw Orlando Garcia a couple times. Who else? Hargrove?
I think Hargrove's there for first pitch. I think I made a comment to you that he looked a little bigger than when he was in college. Put on some pounds.
Gardner was in center. He was in center field. Pretty sure Nestleoni was in left.
Yeah, because he had a top play in like the first inning. Rob, yeah. Sort of a triple or double.
Yeah, it would have gone for extra base hits, definitely. Stephen Smith was out in right. There's Goot hitting a home run. Very nice.
And I know Hargrove was third, one of the many positions he played. He had Orlando at second. Orlando at short. Michael Davis at second. Tyler Floyd behind the plate, I believe.
Yeah, I was never a big fan of it. Like, it just seems like we haven't had a Tech catcher that had any kind of consistent defense in terms of throwing guys out.
Well, I mean, Hunter Redden was that the first year, the first College World Series year. He got drafted in the eighth round by the Dodgers. I mean, he made
but
that big...
But isn't he also back on the coaching staff now?
Yeah. I believe he's the first base coach now. But I remember during that Super Regional against College of Charleston, I believe, someone was running home and Satterberg threw with the Redmond, and he made a great play to tag the runner out. We ended up winning 1-0. So now, since then, it's been kind of iffy. Floyd had a good arm, not the best protector since he's 5'9", but the catcher position defensively has definitely gone downhill since the first College World Series here.
As long as a team doesn't steal as many bases as Sam Houston State does, I think I'll be okay.
Yeah, I actually wrote about that. Like, they went 7-for-7 the last their last two wins against us.
It seemed like anytime they got somebody on first,
their catcher was the one stealing the bags.
Yeah, anytime that they got anybody on first, almost guaranteed he was going to try to steal. 7-for-7 in two games, like, that's...
We just got to hope the team we're playing is not as aggressive.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's look at a couple of our recruiting points, because when Labar's in the 23 Personnel Podcast studio, we have to talk about recruiting. Let's look at basketball, because it looks like the 2018 class... you're getting pretty close to closing that out. You've got two spots left.
Technically one, but I think they may be able, depending if a guy
CJ Roberts, right?
Yeah, I think there's some rumor about CJ Roberts going around, or Josh Webster, well, or if someone sides the transfer.
I think what we've heard is that CJ Roberts is currently serving a suspension, and there is a possibility that he doesn't come out of that suspension. He's either released or not released, but like he either leaves... Or,
which really sucks for me, because even though I already have an Irving head coach, that'd be an Irving player leaving. I need to have as many Irving guys as possible. But speaking of that extra scholarship spot, there is an interesting twist where you have Kellen McCullough, I believe.
McCullough.
Anyway,
I'm just reading his name.
Anyway, his dad was a linebacker at Texas Tech, I believe, in the late 90s.
Yeah, and he just recently got bumped up to a 4-star, didn't he?
No, he's been a 4-star, but he was 2019. He's now 2018, but he'd be enrolling in January. Now, I don't know exactly like how he would do this, but perhaps maybe there's a possibility you could open a scholarship or give him like some sort of grant for like the first 6 months.
Or you would just leave that scholarship open for him for that first semester.
But what if you get... The next two guys we're about to talk about, what if one of them commit? Then you have zero scholarships, and then what if this guy wants to come later?
I'm just kidding.
It's a very interesting dilemma, but I think we've seen Beard kind of, which is weird. We saw this when he first got hired. He kind of pushed out Toby's freshman, CJ Williamson, Jordan Jackson, and some other like Canadian guy or foreign guy. He did so little here, I can't even remember his name. But but I think he kind of pushed them out to create scholarships, so maybe he does that again, or maybe they find some money for like 6 months. Or possibly they can convince him to stay in high school or not come to campus right away. Who knows?
Or you look at one of your guys and say, hey, can we have you walk on for year one?
Yeah, like have them walk on for a semester, possibly.
Yeah, cause I'm not sure how that would work in basketball because of the sport crossing over the semester. Because I know you can do that for football, because it's like if you're looking at a senior, you can release their scholarship basically after December and bring in guys like that.
Well, I know we had this isn't Tech, but Doug McDermott a few years ago did that for Creighton, where he forfeited a scholarship. I'm not sure if it was a semester or a whole year, and he gave it to a player that was more in need, one of the walk-on players who was about to leave due to money issues. So perhaps maybe one of them gives it up. But Kevin McCullough, whatever his name is, Right now, like I said, he's a Tech legacy. He has 5 official visits during the summer, Texas Tech being the second of those visits, which I'm not crazy about. I'd rather have that towards the end if you're going to have a guaranteed 5 visits, basically.
Yeah, so he's taken 4 of those 5. I'm looking at it on 24/7. Looks like he's got 4 of those 5 within like a 2-week span. He goes June 10th, June 13th, 15th, and then the 21st. So 4 visits in 11 days, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, and he's also kind of what Tech wants in a guy. 6'6", big body, can switch on defense. Basically another one of these Jarrett Culver type clones.
Yeah, so he's listed as a forward, which I think is interesting because if you look at the other guy that we can't pronounce his name.
Both,
his first name, G-A-C-H. He's listed as a guard at 6'7".
Basically, it means that he's not as strong as what I would guess.
So I wonder if he's more of like a shooting forward, like a small forward. I don't know, because he's not listed as a forward.
Now, he's the guy you mentioned that got bumped to a 4-star, which actually reminds me a lot of Zaire Smith coming out of high school. Because I believe he committed to Tech in May, which was after all the recruiting process. Really didn't pick up a lot of these, you know, D1 scholarships till late. I mean, he had about 10, 12 scholarships, but a lot of the early ones were not as – they weren't Power 5 schools or anything. So he's kind of like in that same situation where he's athletically gifted, got noticed kind of late, became really high recruit as of late, and all these D1 scholarships are coming his way. And now I believe he's down to San Diego State, Texas Tech, and some other school. I can't remember the third one.
His profile is showing 9, so I don't think it's been updated yet. So yeah, you've got 3 guys left on your radar, 1 spot, probably a second scholarship opening up
somehow, some way.
So you can take 2 of them. You can probably comfortably take 2 of them before you start getting kind of shady and asking people to leave.
Well, the thing about that Keontae Kennedy guy is he's committing Wednesday, March 30th. So we'll know then. I think he's not coming here.
You mean May 30th isn't like tomorrow?
As in tomorrow, depending on when this drops. It could be tomorrow, could be today, could
have been yesterday. Well, yeah, so we're recording Tuesday the 29th. It will go up. Well, if you listen to it on Podbean or iTunes, it'll go up tonight. If you're listening to it from Staking the Plains, it'll be on the 30th. Anyways, he announces his commitment tomorrow.
Between SMU, Xavier, which was his original commitment before the coach left, and Texas Tech. But I have not heard a whole lot about him in Tech, and I just don't have a good feeling it's going to be Tech.
Yeah, so if you look at the crystal ball, the predictions on 24/7, it's got a heavy lean towards SMU and then to Xavier. So it looks like it's a 60-30 everybody else.
Is Larry Brown still at SMU? I thought he was. He might be. The appeal to SMU is Dallas because they're kind of in and out of the tournament, but they keep on getting these high star guys.
And you would be the big fish playing in the.
But then again, it is Larry Brown. American. And, I mean, who knows how many scandals Larry Brown has been in?
Because he got that 5-star that was down to Tech and SMU a couple years ago, and then like almost immediately came out.
Yeah, it was Keith Frazier, another Irving guy.
Oh yeah, and then it's like, oh look, he cheated.
And now he's at UTEP, which
that's an interesting move.
no offense to UTEP, but they have 100% acceptance rate, so him not having good grades probably allowed him to play there. That is not at all a diss, by the way. It's just he needed somewhere he could play. UTEP's a lot of kids get into UTEP. He probably figured at least I don't have to worry as much as I would at SMU or Texas Tech.
Yeah, so it looks like if you're looking at possibilities of the 3 guys, you're looking at 2, both Both Gok and Kevin McCullough are your more likely commits. Both are 4-star guys.
Yeah, hopefully at least one of them.
Yeah.
As long as Tech gets one of these 3 4-stars, then I think we can call the 2018 recruiting class an extremely successful.
Yeah, you would think like so that you would get more 4-stars than you've signed since 2007.
Yeah, you would have Kayvon Moore, top 50 guy. You would have one of those 3 guys, which is a 4-star. You would have
if not 2 of those 3 guys.
Well, if CJ can't play, but CJ, who was a high 3-star, low 4-star, depending on what service you looked at, Deshaun Corpru, who was a 4-star out of high school, and who's the number two JUCO at South Plains. And then you have Kyler Edwards, who's a high three-star, but maybe the sneakiest recruit in this 2018 class, has kind of the perfect body for Beard's system. So you can't get much better than that.
Yeah, it's going to be a good recruiting class, regardless of how it ends up. It closes up here in the next couple of weeks.
And then you have football.
Completely different. We actually had one of the questions. This one came in from my brother, Preston. He's a little more down on Tech football recruiting, especially when, was it Martin Zeno? No, that's basketball. Zeno.
Jacob, I think it's Jacob Zeno. He was Santonio John Jay. He was a high three-star quarterback. The reason why I probably asked that question is because he visited Tech. He seemed like he really liked Tech, and then all of a sudden it's Baylor for like a month or two when he committed to the school in Waco last week.
Yeah, yeah.
So, of course, now the top quarterback option is a low three-star quarterback from San Angelo Central.
And I can't tell if they're trying to just sunshine pump or what, but they're blowing a lot of smoke about this guy.
I mean, there's a lot of schools. There is a lot of schools visiting Maverick McIver. By the way,
what an awesome
for those who didn't know, his dad played at UT, so it'd be kind of a flipping the sides there. But he has got a lot of visitors during the spring, so maybe he's not as highly recruited as some of the other guys, but it's not like he's just some off the wall quarterback. Like, he's starting to get some attention.
Yeah, he's dual threat, 2019 class. 6'3", 195, 100% predicted to go to Texas Tech. Other schools of interest: Arizona State, Boise State, Bowling Green, Colorado State. If you look closer, they've got...
So they're competing with a bunch of schools with not super high offenses there.
Iowa, looks like UL, Lafayette, Minnesota, North Carolina.
Minnesota's really hard on them.
North Texas, Ole Miss, Rutgers, UTSA, UTEP, and Washington State.
Of course, Tech offers a quarterback, and Mike Leach does the same thing.
It's like he just waits for our guys to offer a quarterback. Yeah, I agree.
That's the thing about all these air raid guys, all these like explosive high offenses. You could probably bet a lot of money that one of the first like two or three schools to offer one of them will be either Washington State or Texas Tech. It's always that way. But as far as the recruiting class goes, with the question about how come, you know, we can't pull as many guys as we did in, say, 2015.
Yeah, his exact words says, seems like he can't recruit dirt to Lubbock.
And that's really hard, considering there already is a lot of dirt to Lubbock.
There is.
But
dust storms like every day.
Well, I think the reason why is because back in 2014, 2015, when we started getting these high guys, you had this young 33-year-old coach just coached up Johnny Manziel, who, you know, high school kids loved because of the flair and the what he brought to the game.
His obnoxious nature.
Yeah, and you thought, oh, there's this guy who can make a great offense. He's going to do a lot of great things at Tech. He's going to win 8-plus games every year. But the thing is, the product just didn't show. They went 8 years that first year, mostly Tuberville guys. Then it went down to 4. Then the 7, then the 5, then the 6, and it's just kind of been average as far as wins and losses go, and below average as far as conference records go. So Cliff can no longer preach the "we have a lot of promise here" thing.
Except if you look at putting NFL quarterbacks in the NFL, he hasn't coached a guy that hasn't started at Tech that hasn't gone to the NFL.
Yeah, that's the one plus he's got is Patrick Mahomes.
Well, like, you know, Davis Martin was also the NFL.
Davis Martin, too. But
Baker Mayfield went number one overall.
But I think another thing also is that it's not like these guys are big enough to average, like, high school people. Or high school recruits are going to be like, oh, you coached him?
Except for Manziel.
But Manziel's also a recovering alcoholic in the Canadian Football League now.
Well, like I said, you can also point to Mahomes, who was going to be starting for the Chiefs this year.
Yeah, so I think just a combination of those things. Now, maybe if Mahomes just goes off this year, he'd be like, yeah, I coached that guy. And then maybe the quarterbacks come up again. But that's the reason why we can't get all these guys. It's just, hey, you want to finish with 6 wins this season?
Or do you want to win, you know, 8, 9, 10 and go to a decent bowl game and not get...
Yeah, I mean, that's just the harsh recruiting of it. So now you got to find these low to mid 3 stars, a few guys here and there that are like legacies and want to come here. You got to be able to coach those guys well enough to be in that 8-9 win category. And then you can recruit like you did in 2014, 2015 again, where it's like, hey, look what I can do. Look what we're going to do.
Yeah, you just need to win more games, obviously. We've been talking about that.
Or, you know, you give a kid $100,000 too, but it's one of the two.
I wonder why we aren't paying our recruits. Anyways, so we've kind of touched on this a little earlier, but it was a question about starting a pitcher with bad ERA in game one of the Big 12 tournament. So this question's coming from Amy Nelson at ANLINA Designs.
Austin, Texas.
Referring back to starting Sublette in game one of the Big 12 tournament, I think, one, because looking at the length of that tournament, it's also unlikely that you're going to be competing for the championship. Sorry, I just blanked on that word.
And if you were, you kind of needed to win it to make any sort of movement as far as where you were going to play.
Yeah, so there wasn't a lot of upside to going all out to win the tournament. You also need to figure out who you had. I think you figured out you don't have a guy in Sublette, so you figured that out.
That's exactly what you need to do. It's a tournament situation. You kind of preach to them that, hey, this is a big deal. How do they respond to that?
The guys that pitched with Sublette and then Freeman did not respond.
Yeah, so maybe we'll see less of them.
Hope so. I think they combined for what, 14 walks?
I did not watch that game. I think I was watching I was watching the Celtics, and I saw it was 12-2, and I was like, nope. And you saw Cheddar and Harpenu do well, so you find out, okay, these are the guys I can trust. You all saw the catcher position. You saw a little bit more Braxton Fulford. So looks like, okay, Fulford did not play bad. Maybe he's the guy I should throw out there this weekend. It's basically these games don't mean that much. It's basically postseason, preseason, if that makes any sense in the wording.
Sure, yeah. You're looking at your first postseason play that isn't all that meaningful.
Correct.
So
I think I love what Tadlock did. I think we found a lot of answers, and I think we have a good idea now about who should be out there. And then we can all get mad when that doesn't happen.
Yeah, we're all going to throw our arms up. Tadlock, why did you not start Cheddar?
What, it's a 4-4 game, and he threw in a guy who has walked like 50 people this year?
She also asked what happened to Davis Martin. Again, I don't know, besides he just kind of went through a rough spot and then hasn't fully recovered mentally, I guess.
My theory also is that maybe that lingering arm thing is not quite ready yet. Because I think he hurt that in late March last year. I don't know how long those things usually last, but maybe it's a thing where he didn't pitch. Because I don't think he pitched that much during the fall, so maybe it was it doesn't quite feel comfortable yet. Like, you need a year to actively recover from it.
That, it looked like even through most of the season, his innings were pretty limited. He didn't seem to go very deep into games.
No, he kept getting pulled after 80 pitches, which is why I think maybe Tadlock's thinking, okay, even though he pitched in the last season, like, maybe this guy's not 100%. I care about my players. I'm not going to ruin his draft stock. I'm not going to get him even more injured. We're just going to give him 80, 90 pitches, and he's done.
And then she wraps up with, can we hope for neither to recur in the regional? So she's talking about the bad start from Sublette and then a below average start for Martin.
I don't expect Sublette. Martin's kind of up in the air. If we look at their past starts, maybe that happens. Maybe Tadlock will only let him go 3 innings, 4 innings. Who knows?
If you're getting to Sublette, I think something's wrong.
Happened. Like, either that or he lost the first game and it's been an uphill battle. And it's like, oh, well, it's game 5. We've won 3 in a row.
And you don't have anybody else.
Who do we have
left?
Look in the bullpen. Sublette's just there waving like, put me in, coach.
Put me in, coach.
God, I feel so bad for the kid. I feel like we're ripping him apart for no reason.
He's just young and inconsistent. If he can get over the start he had in Oklahoma City, I don't know. See, I wouldn't call on him to start a game. Like, if we're gonna see him in the regional, I want him coming in as a reliever.
just an innings eater, basically.
If that's part of his game, unless he's like mentally, he has to be a starter, otherwise he's off.
Speaking of which, what happened to John Henry Gonzalez? I feel like he's just fallen off the face of the earth.
Yeah, his name popped up. I can't remember reading about it, but it was the same type of thing. They were asking what happened to him, and just haven't seen him. He seemed decent last year, from what I remember.
I mean, he had stuff, but I mean,
he also started for a while. He was like
that. He started well in the beginning. He was pitching that 13-1 win over Arizona, who was like number 9 at the time. Then he struggled for a start. Martin gets hurt. They put him in the Friday slot, and it was just all downhill from there.
We have two questions from Michael, who should have been here recording tonight, but he decided his teeth didn't feel too good. It's weak sauce, by the way, Michael. How excited are you for Cavs v. Warriors round 4? On a scale of 1 to 10, a 1 or 0. I don't care. As much as we were a couple years ago talking about the rematch between LSU and Alabama for the national championship game.
Well, I like rematches if the part one was great. Like Alabama-Clemson, I appreciated all three Alabama-Clemsons, the two in the championship game and the one in the semifinal. Those three were all good games, I thought.
Sure.
The best one was the one that Clemson won, but I remember all three of those games. Warriors and Cavs were good for 2 years, and then the Warriors added Kevin Durant, and it's like, well, this is okay. And I'm not just saying this because my team got eliminated when they should have won. If literally more
sour grapes, he's being salty over here.
If you know someone other than a 20-year-old and a grandpa didn't show up, but at least the Celtics had the men to at least give the Warriors at least some challenge. What they would have won? No, the Warriors still probably would have won 5-4 or 5, but at least it wouldn't be like, oh, well, no one can guard him because this team doesn't play defense and only one guy's good on the team.
I want to know how you can root for a team with Marcus Smart on it.
Well, funny thing, I actually like Marcus Smart. I liked him before the whole, like, push the old man thing, but I don't think we need to get into why I like him because I could sit here for like 30 minutes. I argue with my brother, a Celtics fan, all the time about why he's good. I don't think we need a Marcus Smart conversation in a Texas Tech podcast.
So, yeah, so we've talked about this before. I'm not a big NBA fan outside of the Mavericks. They haven't been good in several years
and
now.
And since the Mavericks aren't playing like an NBA team, you're not a fan of the NBA right now.
It's true. You know, they look like they've drafted a couple decent pieces in Dennis Smith Jr. and then the guy they got this year. I'm already blanking on his name.
The guy that doesn't exist
No, not this year. I don't know.
Dennis Smith was 2017, and this year they haven't drafted yet, so.
Right. Okay, so I think I was thinking about a projection they were looking at.
Yeah, the projected pick.
Yeah. Anyways, they need to be building towards a Nowitzki-less future, because that 40-year-old is going to move on eventually.
I mean, he's already not the same guy. He's basically a bench player at this point anyway. Yeah.
Who's starting, essentially, right? I don't even know.
I think he starts some games. I don't think he starts every game.
So,
but anyway, answer this question. I think my excitement's at a 2 or a 3. I'll be more interested probably in the Stanley Cup playoffs this time around.
Yeah, the other thing, as a casual NBA fan, from what I've heard, it's basically LeBron James versus the Warriors, and he's pretty worn out at this point.
Yeah, that's why I was so mad that the Celtics lost, because it was a worn-out LeBron and a bunch of scrubs. And, of course, they didn't show up for Game 7.
Yeah.
Except for a guy who can't even order a drink at a bar.
Too young to get a drink. All right, Michael's last question. I'm out on Tech hosting a Super Region, but do you think they will make one? So, to recap, we mentioned this. For Tech to be able to host a Super Regional, we're matched up with the winner of the Georgia Regional. Anybody except Georgia winning that regional would mean that Tech would host if Tech also won.
Unless Tech also becomes incredibly, incredibly cheap.
What do you mean?
I think if they just didn't want to put the money, they could go to a Duke. But obviously Tech's not going to be cheap, so yeah.
No, yeah, I think as a 1 seed, as a number 9 national seed, I think they would jump on the opportunity to host, because they did that when they had College of Charleston.
Yeah, because I remember there's some people thinking, like, is Tuck actually going to want to host this thing?
I don't see why you wouldn't.
Yeah.
So for Tech to host, like I said, you obviously have to win your regional. And then of the four teams in the Georgia regional, anybody but Georgia to win, then you could host. Michael doesn't think that we'll host a super regional. I don't disagree because it would take several things to happen.
Well, Duke's not that bad. And Georgia's good, but I don't think they're not a Florida or an Ole Miss or a Oregon State. So, I mean, Duke's always had a solid baseball program. Duke could upset him. I could see it. It's definitely a possibility.
Would be kind of interesting to see a baseball matchup in June and then a basketball matchup in December between Texas Tech and Duke.
That would be fun.
Would kind of complete the trifecta if we were also playing Duke in like non-conference football in like September.
Now the question is, if all three of those things happen, how many of them is Tech winning? One, if?
I would say two.
You think we win in football and baseball? Because we ain't being the basketball.
I'm not super excited or thrilled about that game in Madison Square Garden.
To be honest, I just wanted to see one of Duke's top recruits, Zion Williamson, just dunk on somebody.
Dude, recruits, they got like three of the top five.
They got the number one recruit, number two, number three, number like five, number like 21. I feel sorry for the 21 guy. Like, hey, I'd be a top recruit anywhere, but here I'm like the scapegoat of the
freshman five. Yeah, he's like the lowest recruit, like lowest ranked guy.
He's gonna be the Mario Chalmers of that group, of the Miami Heat. Like, hey, what are you doing? Get it together. And anywhere else, he'd be the star.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. They're that signing class this year. Anyways, but Michael says, do you think they will make one? I think you win games one and two, you're in a good spot. You obviously favored. You should have a pretty easy job, knock on wood, to win game one.
Because as we saw earlier this year, Louisville's weekday starts aren't exactly anything hot either.
Yeah, so I think you have a better than 50-50 chance of making it to a super. You just got to win game one with Shedder, not Martin or Killian.
I think that's the way to go.
Okay. All right, last thing. What we learned this week. You got anything earth-shattering over there?
Well, as far as Tech sports go, not much.
There hasn't been a whole lot of news this week.
I have learned is something that I kind of knew. Is I hate driving long distances. I drove from Lubbock to Dallas and then Dallas to Kilgore, which is right outside of kind of between Longview and Tyler, then back to Dallas, then back to Lubbock. And I just don't like it at all.
Yeah, so the only long distance driving I do is between Lubbock and Dallas. So anything like you get to that 5.5 hour mark in the car, I'm just getting like really antsy to get out. Even if I'm not going to Dallas, or am I spending more than 6 hours in a car? I'm like,
I think it's fine once you hit the city because it's kind of like a change of pace and the change of scenery. Just the speed's different, everything's different. But when it's just like a constant, it's when it's annoying. Like in every summer, my family members in Kilgore, they rent a place in Gulf Shores, Alabama, which is 10 hours away from Kilgore, 12 hours from Dallas. And I've made that trick a decent amount of times. And there's some times where I'm just like, do we really want to go? Do we really want to sit in the car for 12 hours and then a week later do 12 more hours?
No.
It's brutal. I wish flying was incredibly cheap. That'd be so much better.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I have a lot of PTO accrued at work that I want to start using. I'm like, well, I should just go, you know, visit my parents in Dallas. And I was like, well, we have two vehicles. One, not super reliable. So I'm not like, I don't want to take it. It's also really bad on gas. So we've thought about either renting a car or flying out. But, you know, even if you catch like the Southwest one day deals, like they're what, $60 per person per way. It's like, if it was me and Grayson to go.
Well, that's not
like
too
$250
bad.
Before tax.
But I mean, like Greyhounds, if you ride the Greyhound bus, that's like $50. So it's
but
not
it's also
bad
like
compared to that.
24 hours on a bus
from here to Dallas. Not exactly. I mean, it ends up becoming. I've ridden this a few times because my car was pretty crap for a few years. but it doesn't take you directly to Lubbock. So that's like a 7-hour trip if you want to go from Lubbock to Dallas, basically 7-8 hours.
Okay, this says anywhere between 7.5 hours and 10 hours, depending on how long you stop.
But I mean, I understand your point. If it's one guy going, like typically I did when I fly, that's not a huge deal. But yeah,
if you're all a second person, it's like, oh, yeah, I don't know.
If you're all flying, that's $180. You driving, it's maybe like $25 in gas one way, $25, $30, depending on your vehicle. Maybe up to $40 if you have a low mileage car or truck.
Yeah, so it'd be in the truck, and it would probably be $45 to $50 each way.
So, I mean, if it's one person, that's not bad. But I can understand if it's, you know, your whole family, basically.
What did I learn this week? I learned, shoot, it's difficult. I learned we got super lucky with the hailstorm. I don't know how we did it. So our neighbor next door, she had significant roof damage. Like I said, our houses are maybe 6 feet apart. We had, our brother-in-law, who is an insurance adjuster, get up on our roof and checked it out. And he said, you may have had one decent hail hit up there, and our neighbor is potentially looking at replacing her 6-month-old roof.
Jeez.
So we got super lucky. This, it happened on Saturday night that we were coming back from Nashville when I was out there for a conference. The truck that was parked out front of our house did not have any hail damage on it. The house, like I said, had one probable hit of hail. The car that was parked at the airport didn't have any hail damage, so we got pretty lucky with that.
Yeah, I just got a new car. Or I should, not new, it's used, but it's
new to you.
It's new to me. Back in March, and since then I've hailed like 4 or 5 times here. Jeez, like, you couldn't do this in my old car. Just
yeah, and we're just now getting into the stormy season, really. Which is funny, because the last time you were here, you were concerned about actually driving all the way out to my house.
My car is so bad, I was worried about driving 10 miles. I was like, I don't know if I could make it. My car might break down on the way there. This is the most I've driven it in like 3 years.
I was prepared to go pick him up, but didn't happen. He made it here, got a new car, so good to go.
And one last thing, and things I learned today. When you graduated and you don't have a plan, you find yourself doing a lot of like random stuff. A lot of sitting around watching Netflix. A lot of like, oh, that movie looks good, but you would never ever watch before that.
That's right.
Because there's only so much you could apply for before you're just sitting there like, well, now I wait.
That's right. Because LeBar did graduate from Texas Tech, was it a week ago?
It was about a week and a half ago, May 18th.
That's right.
So congrats. About 11 days ago. Thanks. But it's a lot of, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just kind of freeballing it and see what happens. I drove back to Dallas just because I didn't know what to do here, really.
You got some time off.
Yeah. Since I'm not working either right now.
Well, as long as you got the gas money, I guess.
It's just kind of doing stuff I've never thought I would do. Just kind of like, oh, well, this will kill about 30 minutes of my time. Downloading and playing a lot of apps like Bejeweled, and it's like a weird Yahtzee game. It's not Yahtzee exactly, but some like strange form of it.
Yeah, I have a small handful of games.
So if you need a good game app, I'm probably your guy to go to right now.
All right. So if you need any game recommendations, hit up LeBar. If you don't know where you can find them, Michael, why don't you go ahead and share your Twitter handle?
@ Michael, MICHAEL _ lab, LAB. It's a bunch of recruiting, and occasionally, since I hate Twitter, just random Boston stuff so I don't get bored to death.
He also hates, like, the super emotional fans that are either super sunshine pumping or super negative.
I'm a math major. What do you expect out of me?
Very analytical, very, very composed.
I'm the guy who looks at a plan like, oh, he should have done that. He should have done this. No, there's nothing to me. It's just a me thing, but it's nothing more annoying than sitting next to a guy that's either, oh, my team's always good. We should win like 8 games in football this year. We should, you know, we have one of the best offenses around. We have, we do on that part, but
most
it's just like everything's positive. We're only going up from here. And then the total opposite, that's a foul. And it's like happened like every 30 seconds. It's like, well, not everything's a foul. And if it is, do you want them to call it every time?
See, that second fan that he just described is probably me.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. During some games during our Slack chats, I see you going like, I'm just going to chomp the notifications for like 5 hours. I'll see y'all later.
Mobby.
I don't want to hear you talking about some goaltending when we're up 10. Oh, it's a goaltend. He hit it off the backboard. Like, yeah. We also probably did it to them too one time.
Whatever, man. Whatever. All right. So, McDonald, you might be losing your spot. Labar came in here, filled in admirably, especially talking about baseball. Also, we will be at least one of the regional games, hopefully Saturday night, in the winner's bracket for Tech as well. If it goes to Monday, I'll be at that game as well.
Hopefully your seat's not in the... I mean, it is in the sun, but hopefully it's not too bad.
The Friday afternoon game will be in the sun a while because, well, I know when we were there earlier this spring, we were in the shade by about 3, but that first game on Friday is going to start at 1, so...
I got the sunscreen.
I'm going to have to bring lots of sunscreen. A bottle to reapply because I'm going to get burned if I don't. So with that... Thanks for listening to episode 20 of the 23 Personnel Podcast. You know what? I was just thinking, we need to do some kind of special episode for episode 23. Episode 23 of the 23 Personnel Podcast. We're gonna do something special for that. I don't know what it is, but we'll figure it out. For Michael, I'm Spencer. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week once we know where Tech baseball is headed.